is why I'm leaving," Roth said. "I tell you the truth, but you won't listen." Eisner said nothing to Steve Bornstein of his decision to name Iger president. Bornstein only learned about it just before the news was released on January 24th and was taken by surprise. Stunned, he went to see Eisner in his office. "I feel incredibly abused," he began. "I guess you're fucked," Eisner replied. "You gave me a commitment," Bornstein reminded him. "You disregarded it." "I changed my mind," Eisner said. 13. The long-awaited Fantasia 2000 premiered at Carnegie Hall in New York in mid-December 1999, with James Levine conducting a live performance by the Philharmonia Orchestra of London, flown in by Disney for the occasion. On New Year's Eve, Disney ushered in the millennium with a $2,000 per person black tie benefit screening in Pasadena, also featuring a live performance by the Philharmonia. Fantasia 2000 opened commercially on New Year's Day in the giant screen IMAX format at just 54 theaters. Roy, credited in the film as executive producer, used the occasion to pay tribute to Walt. What better way to recognize the vision of one man who began building on a dream in the 20th century than by sharing the magic with everyone as we enter the new millennium, Roy said. Dick Cook, the studio's head of marketing and distribution, was doing his best to make Fantasia 2000 an event movie. Roy seemed delighted with all the promotion and related festivities, but Thomas Schumacher, the head of animation, had serious reservations. Each of the eventual 7 premieres in the United States, Europe, and Japan, featuring Levine and the Philharmonia, cost more than $1 million. Excerpts from the original Fantasia seemed grainy on the huge IMAX screen. And in an avalanche of press about the arrival of the millennium, Fantasia 2000, an old-style sequel to a 1940 classic, drew scant attention. Though it initially attracted crowds to IMAX theaters, the seating capacity was so limited that total revenue was modest, less than $3 million for opening weekend. Schumacher also worried that by the time the film opened nationwide, curiosity and interest would have been exhausted. The critical reception was also tepid. Fantasia 2000 contained a few segments as dazzling as anything Disney had produced. A sophisticated homage to Broadway caricaturist Al Hirschfeld, set in an animated New York City to George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, and the concluding episode, a vision of Earth's destruction and renewal set to Igor Stravinsky's The Firebird Suite. But not surprisingly, considering that every episode had a different director and group of animators, it was inconsistent. Fantasia 2000 often has the feel of a giant corporate promotion whose stars are there simply to hawk the company's wares, wrote Stephen Holden in the New York Times. The film is not especially innovative in its look or its subject matter. Despite its science fiction title, the movie is really a compendium of familiar Disney attitudes and styles, one that looks to the past more than to the future. The Eisner-inspired Pomp and Circumstance segment, now featuring Donald Duck trying to board Noah's Ark with the procession of animals, came in for particularly harsh criticism, confirming the animators' view that the piece didn't belong in the film.